Okay, it's time to talk wheels. It's the Car Guy Show with automotive consumer tips, industry updates, interviews, and enthusiast news. If you care about cars, this show's for you. Now you're tuned in, so let's get tuned up with your host. Here he is, Steve Ford, the Car Guy.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guy Show here, coming at you from the broadcast tower of News Talk 990 KTMS. We're connecting you to automotive consumer and enthusiast news, insights, and interviews anywhere you're hearing our signal in Santa Barbara and the surrounding communities. In today's program, the topic we're going to put up on the lift is a travel into the motorsports world, where the quest for going as fast as you can in a perfectly straight line with unlimited open land for miles and miles is more than something folks may daydream about when it comes to the top speeds that vehicles are capable of reaching. Because as much as world-class drag racing can be exciting from the standpoint of 0 to 300 plus miles per hour in a matter of seconds, and Formula One cars almost defy physics with high speeds, cutting-edge technology, and handling abilities, there's one international destination where the real measure of victory is reaching 2, 3, 4, 5, and 600 miles per hour. If you haven't already figured it out, we're heading over to the land speed record world. And the name of this destination is Bonneville, where I had the memorable experience of joining legendary cam grinder and hot rodding pioneer Ed Iskenderian and his close friend Jack Lufkin to drive out to Bonneville and be able to file this report to all of you. Stay tuned, because straight ahead, we're going to visit with these two pioneers from the world of speed right here on the Car Guy Show on News Talk 990 KTMS. Hey, you know about getting the job done right. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Well, that's what car and truck buffs, owners of classics, custom cars, and wise consumers know when they visit Daily Car Bath, Santa Barbara's downtown coin-operated car wash supercenter for more than 40 years. After discovering Daily Car Bath for my own cars, I've returned to give my machines the superior wash and cleaning care that all car buffs appreciate. At Daily Car Bath, you'll find premium hog's hair wash brushes with conditioned soft water and five stalls with foaming, high-sudsing auto shampoo that literally floats debris off your vehicle's finish, along with consistent high-pressure washing and available non-acid, low-pressure wheel and tire cleaner. And for that special finish, DINI spot-free rinse to help dissolve and eliminate mineral spot, and spray wax formulated with clear coat protectant included in the cycle. See why Daily Car Bath is known as the place where customers send their friends. And take it from a fellow car buff, when it comes to the best in car care appearance, you'll find it all at Daily Car Bath, open 24 hours a day at the corner of Anna Kappa and Coda Streets. Quality, economy, and that showroom shine.
Change your life in a big way.
Well, having a mentor saved me. I did not have a father in the home, and my mother was ill most of the time. And Brent really is a great listener, and he really provided that extra leadership that I needed to really grow and become the person that I became. He's a great big brother.
Volunteer or donate to Big Brothers Big Sisters. We need bigs, especially men. Start something. If you're a former big, start something again at BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
In the old-time movies, you used to see an automobile junkyard as a place with rusty old wrecks and big cranes scrapping obsolete machines. Those days were black and white, and today's a world of digital full color. And in the new era of the green car, Steelhead Auto Recycling is at the leading edge of used auto parts. As new and future cars approach 100% recyclability, more than 70% of even older car and truck parts find new life as they come back in service at Steelhead Auto Recyclers, which means huge savings for you. You'll save on major parts such as engines and transmissions, but you can also repair and refresh your wheels with money-saving body trim and accessory parts, from hubcaps to glass, doors, fenders, taillights, and accessories. With a full-service counter and national parts search power and the new self-service section at Steelhead Auto Recycling, you'll save both ways. Plus the security of a full 90-day warranty on all parts. Digital on the web at buyused.net or analog by phone at 683-8557. That's 683-8557. Steelhead Auto Recycling.
Yeah. And we are back with you. You're tuned into the Car Guys Show on News Talk 990 KTMS. Thanks for joining us today for a special visit with two industry and motorsports racing pioneers and insiders from the legendary Salt Flats at Bonneville. Let's swoop over and join them right now. When you go deep inside the automotive culture, you don't have to go really far to hear the name Bonneville over in Utah, Wendover, Utah, to get inside the passion that would make all the human beings who go out every year at various points throughout the year to Bonneville to try to go as fast as they can in an automobile or an automobile-like device. You'll find all kinds of things out there, motorcycles and scooters and little carts and creative things, and there are lakesters and things that look so aerodynamic they look like they should be up in the air at 10,000 feet. But they're down on the ground on flat land that is covered with salt. So the topic we're going into right now is the passion of the salt at Bonneville. And my first guest is the cam grinder himself, starting in 1939 in Los Angeles, working under one of the most famous original creative geniuses behind hot rodding, Edward A. Winfield. He was the mentor to a guy we've all come to know as Iski. Ed Iskenderian is a legend inside the automotive culture. Ed, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Well, it's good to have you on, Ed. And I want to tell you, I'm reminiscing here for a moment to realize that it's fortunate for me to have time with you and our other guests here upcoming in a moment, because you were kind enough to call me up and you said, have you ever been to Bonneville? And I hadn't. And you invited me to go along with you and Jack Lufkin, your buddy over at Ack Miller's Garage. And Jack Lufkin was the first guy to take a big block Chevy, put a turbocharger on it, run it up to 12 or 1300 horsepower, and go 300 miles an hour at Bonneville. So our second guest here on a panel about Bonneville Speedway is Jack Lufkin, connecting with us from Ack Miller's Garage. Jack, welcome to the Car Guy Show.
I'm glad to be here, Steve.
It's good to be on with you. Across the drive, we talked about Bonneville, and I realized, you know, when I came back from having gone out there with you and Iski, I realized we should share some of what I learned with the audience on the radio show. And so I'm glad to bring you guys on just to share a little bit of your expertise and insights into the world of Bonneville and why there's a passion there. Let me jump back over to Iski for a moment. Ed, when you called me up to invite me to join you to go out to Bonneville, you've got to imagine, I'm sure you understand, it was for me like being a little boy again. I mean, the idea of going with a legend like you out to Bonneville, having you explain to me what we were looking at and watching you interact with the people who are racers out there. And the Jack, the same thing goes for you. To be along with you, ultimate hot rodders, who've done this and been there, I just was enamored with the whole experience.
Ed is a one of a kind type of guy who one in a million.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad to know him and work with him.
Sure.
That and I'm proud of the fact that you got me on the radio with it. I mean, it's an honor for me.
Well, it's I appreciate what you mean on this, and I promised you I'd do this, Jack, when we went to Bonneville, and so it's good to make good on a promise to you. And Ed, thank you both for letting me go with the two of you, because, Jack, I sense the richness of your friendship with Iski, and Iski, I sense your loyalty to Jack, and to go along with you guys on that adventure driving out to Bonneville. And can I laugh with you for a second and tell you, I won't give them the details, but if I could even plug in the fact that you let me drive for a spell, and the next thing I know, I'm being pulled over by some police officers, and it turns out you know them.
It was a setup, right?
Yep. You set me up to be caught, and you watched me look in the rearview mirror and say, "I'll do the talking here, Jack." I'm kidding. But when your buddy walked up, it was very fun, and I'll never get over that one. I'll never trust anybody again.
Well, you know the story behind the story with this guy. He was the undersheriff of the county.
Yeah.
This particular guy now, and he just got out of the service, and he, you know, he's the undersheriff. And
yeah.
Him and I had become very good friends. When he was 4 years old, I used to stop at the gas station
that Alamo.
His father owned in Alamo, and yeah. I'd leave him a Iski T-shirt on his.
Oh my gosh! You go back way back with him.
Doorstep. Oh, yeah.
Well, I remember now, you know, you picked up your cell phone, and I'm driving along, and I remember you made a phone call on your cell phone, and you knew I had no idea what you were doing. You were calling your buddy who was a cop and having him pull me over.
Sure.
Yeah.
Set up.
I was set up by Iski and his bosom buddy, Jack Lufkin. I'm telling you, on the way to Bonneville, that was it's a privilege to have had you guys do a prank.
Well, I tell you what, you weren't the only one that got set up. We would set up somebody every year, and you would just, it was your year.
Well, Ed, you know I'm honored, right? I'm honored to have been one of your setup guys on the way to Bonneville. Okay, well.
And you told me to keep quiet, but quit telling that policeman there that you have friends in high places, and you better let us go.
Oh, my gosh. Ed.
Oh, please be quiet. Please be quiet.
Ed, let me be sure. Ed, I thought, was going off on a rant, and I thought he was going to get me in deeper trouble. And, Ed, you were so funny, and I'm sure you were giggling inside because you were knowing Steve's afraid we're going to get in more trouble, and you're just messing with that cop. You guys were ringing out that stunt all for the joy of watching me cringe, right?
That's right, yeah.
Ed, I'm sorry. I had no idea. You know, that's how good you guys pulled that stunt off. And then I find out that the cop that pulled us over is laughing with you and knowing that you were just putting me in for a scare. And I think I was going the speed limit or close to it, right?
Sure, you were going slow enough.
Yeah. So I thought something's not right here. And then when I found that out, I realized, oh, my gosh. But I want to ask the two of you, what is the most powerful piece that made either of you attracted to Bonneville? What was your first experience, Ed, when you first went to Bonneville, and why?
Well, I missed the first year, which was 1949, and Dormaline and Doug Harrison were taking an AV-8 flathead roadster up there, and I gave them $100 expense money.
Were you sponsoring them? Was that a sponsorship?
Yeah, that was a sponsorship for gasoline. It was cheap, and they could make it with $100.
And you hadn't been out there at this point?
Yeah, and that's when they came back with a T-shirt they had made. Where'd you get this made? He told me up in Hollywood, and we started that T-shirt craze as far as we know.
What was on the T-shirt?
Yeah, the Esky logo, yeah.
So that logo went to Bonneville in 1949?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. They gave us the idea to make T-shirts like that afterwards.
So did your decal go to Bonneville before you did?
Yes, 1 year before. Then I went the next year, 1950.
Okay.
Started going.
And you knew it was the place where your camshafts were going to be proving themselves?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. Did you ever run a car, or were you going always as a participant in terms of checking out the cars that your camshafts were running?
Just going up to help the guys that were running my cam, and okay. And we learned too as we went along. And later on, we ran my son and his friend ran a Corvette up there. But for many years, I would just go up and participate and advertise a T-shirt and so forth.
Your sponsored car first went there in 1949, and it was your camshaft went out to Bonneville before you did.
Yes, that's right.
That's fun. So when you look back, what were your thoughts when you went out to Bonneville? What was it about what did you think of the white salt or it kept you coming back now for over five decades? Six decades.
It's a vast expanse there, and they meet a lot of nice people up there. Of course, you learn a lot.
Yeah.
And
fantastic. Jack, for you.
Yes, sir.
Now, you didn't meet Iskey until, what, 1960, you said? Or when did you meet Ed?
Well, I don't even remember when I met Ed. I met him probably in the late 50s. I met him as owner of Ed Niskanderian Cams, and I didn't discover until later that he was number one in the cam business. I mean, there was Bruce Crower and Howard Johansson and Ed Winfield and Ed Iskanderian.
That was it. Those are the leaders.
Those are the people that knew how to design cams, and
yep.
It's a very short list.
I understand.
There's a lot of cam grinders out there, but all they did was copy what Ed did.
Iskey, when you dealt with Ed Winfield, he was a bit of a mentor to you. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
I bought
my first cam from him.
And what year?
He showed how he had made his machine. I was fascinated by it.
What year would that be?
After the war, I decided I'd like to try that, and I built my machine. You had to build your own machine in those days.
What year are we talking about?
1946.
Okay. And I thought you bought your first cam grinder in 39.
No, I visited Winfield in 39 to buy a cam. That's when he showed me how he had built his machine.
And when did you buy your first camshaft grinder lathe?
We would buy a cylindrical grinder and make a cam grinding attachment for them.
So when did you first buy your cam grinding equipment?
Oh, 1946.
Okay, so right after the war. There you were with Ed Winfield, and you looked up to him. You saw him as the master.
That's right.
Okay. And so, Jack and Ed, you guys evolved into knowing each other. Jack, you don't remember a time when you met Iske for the first time?
Well, I met him in the 50s.
Late 50s. Okay. So you met Ed in the late 50s when the hot rod culture was starting to really blossom.
We were doing a lot of dyno specialty tune-up stuff at the garage at that time. And at that time, I was running the dyno, and I was working as the lead mechanic out there. And
you're talking about Ack Miller's Garage, right?
Yeah.
You guys, at Ack Miller Garage over in Pico Rivera, where you are, Ack Miller Garage is legendary for building some incredibly powerful machines. What was your evolution to get to the point where you were the first to drive a big block Chevy turbocharged to over 300 miles an hour? Am I correct? That was a 1,300 horsepower big block. Is that right?
Yeah. When I got in with a Iske cammed 300 cubic inch small block Chevy in a Corvette, and I averaged 204.248.
Did you hit 180, 190 with that engine earlier? Was there a threshold?
Oh, yeah, there were things. It progressed. Okay. My first run at Bonneville was in 1960.
Okay.
Where I went 100 in the 160 range.
In what car?
In a Corvette.
Okay.
And then I built a special Corvette, racing Corvette. I was the first one to get in the 200 club with normally in aspirated or unblown, and I averaged 204.248.
Very cool.
At that time was a flying machine.
Absolutely. It sounds exciting to be, and normally aspirated for folks who are listening, we're everyday drivers. Hopefully we have some everyday motorists who might be a little intrigued to go inside the race for horsepower and speed at Bonneville. But normally aspirated, meaning there's no forced air induction like a supercharger or a turbocharger.
At Ack Miller Garage, we actually perfected the turbocharger for racing and for automobiles.
What would you, when you say perfecting a turbocharger, for folks listening, when you went to a turbocharger on your engine at Bonneville, that was what it was going to take to get you to 300?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So what would you guys like people to know about the experience? You know, we've jumped across time here, Ed, from your experience with Ed Winfield. Jack, we've looked at how you guys merged into the same culture together, and Jack, you ended up using an Iske cam. Ed? What would you like people to understand about Bonneville today in a historic sense and the passion of the salt that really helped them understand what is it that is the magic that makes people so passionately devoted to going out to Bonneville every year?
Well, just remember this, that we are probably, as hot rodders, we're very, very fortunate that we have a place like Bonneville. It's 700 miles away from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it's the only place on Earth that has level ground for 20 miles.
Iske?
Yes.
What is it that you think is so alluring about Bonneville that makes you excited about it when you go out? And what should the general audience or car buffs who've never been to Bonneville know that has you always enamored going out there and looking at what's happening at Bonneville?
It's the environment, the ingenuity that the different guys put into their cars. And so it's very exciting to look at all the things that these fellows have built on their own, everyone using their own imagination.
Right.
And one of the smart things Jack did, when you say it was a big block, but he made it into a small block. He made it smaller into 300 cubic inches to fit a certain cubic inch class. And with the turbocharger, he had the strength of the big block, and yet he could put a lot of power into that big block engine, which was now a small block, short stroke engine, turbocharged, and it was a smart way to go.
That sounds
fascinating.
Instead
of making a small engine bigger,
right,
which became weaker when you tried to get too much engines, cubic inches out of an engine, this was a smart way to go. That's why that was so successful. I think that engine is still running up there.
That 300-inch engine is still running.
Okay, so, Jack, when you ran the 300-mile-an-hour run with a turbocharged big block, what cubic inch displacement was that block when you started? Was it a 427?
A 454.
It sounds like a de-stroked big block Chevy so that you could get higher RPM out of it, and that big block would be less stressed with a high RPM short-stroke crank than it would have been by pushing that thing to 550 cubic inches or something and stressing it. What about the compression ratio? What do you do when you're turbocharging? What boost did you run, and what compression ratio was that block?
Well, I was always one to run low compression ratio and pump a lot of air.
Okay.
No, I ran my big engine, I ran only 4-to-1 compression.
4-to-1 compression. Wow. And what boost?
15 pounds.
Okay. So that's an interesting situation. What was the compression ratio, do you think, effective, approximately?
Oh, well, it would be closer to 16-to-1.
Oh, because you were starting with 4-to-1 compression, right, Jack?
Yes, I was.
So, Ed, you're saying it would be 4 times, multiplying it by 4 times as much with 15 pounds boost. Is that fair to say?
Well, 3 to 4 times anyway.
Okay. So it'd be multiplying it. Is that a good way
that's
to put
right.
it?
Yeah.
So you did that one incredible run, and was that what the vehicle that was that in a Corvette or was that in a Lakester or a Streamliner or what was the vehicle platform, Jack?
Oh, it was a reworked Indianapolis type race car. It looked like a Streamliner, Streamline sports car is what it was.
Okay, Ed.
Yeah.
Streamliner and Lakester, can you give us an overview? Jack was just referring to it, that particular style. You can run a basically stock body car in a certain class, but there's the Lakester and the Streamliner. What's the evolution of those, and what can we give the audience that you would want them to understand, the Lakester and Streamliner?
Well, they have these different classes because of the streamlining. So there's different ways to get partial Streamliner. You might say they're partial Streamliners and partial stock car classes.
Somebody.
Lakester started out as a belly tank, or a gasoline belly tank off the World War II airplanes. You put your engine and driver inside, the wheels were out in the open. That was the, it became, it, first they were belly tanks, and then they were called Lakesters, because the guys sometimes made their own body.
So if the wheels were covered by the metal, it would be
then
called...
Definitely a Streamliner then.
So
yeah.
For folks that have seen pictures of these cars that go for the land speed record at Bonneville, if they see it sort of all wrapped around with sheet metal, that would be called...
All around the wheels?
Yeah.
Then it would be a Streamliner.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. So a Streamliner would be looking almost like an airplane.
Yeah, that's right.
And a Lakester would be when the wheels
open
are exposed.
Open wheels.
Great. You know, just to clarify. Now, Jack, just incidentally... Are you an engineer by background, or are you a mechanic who turned into a wizard of making horsepower? What came first?
I was always interested in cars, and I went to my high school vocational school. I can tell you how I first started. I can tell you a quick story where I first started to become a hot rodder.
Okay.
It was a Model A Ford. And these guys, like Iski, were a little older than I, and they're out here, and Hot Rod Magazine came along, and they're doing 0 to 60 was the big test point. They could do 0 to 60 in so many seconds.
Right.
And I took my Model A, and I took a stopwatch, and I could only go 58. I went from 0 to 58.
Right.
I couldn't go 60.
Right.
And I had to figure, I asked my dad, I says, how can I make my car go 60? I says, it only doesn't go that fast.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be in the club too.
Yep.
And he says, well, I don't know, Jack. You know, he was a commercial fisherman.
Yep.
And he hooked me up with a machinist at Gorton's of Gloucester, the fishing deal, which is, they had their own machine shop at that time. And the head machinist says, well, I know I can mill your head.
Right.
And I says, well, okay, if I take it off, can you do it? Yeah. So I quickly took the head off and brought it into him, and I said, okay, I want it milled.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, how much do you want me to take off? And I said, I don't know. It takes a quarter of an inch. When
that's going to
that
boost the compression ratio.
That was my first experience with being a hot rod, and
sure.
I went from my stop. Timing went from 0 to 72 then.
Well, you were smitten then.
Well, that was my first start with hot rodding.
You were there, Jack, at that budding period of the hot rod world. And Iski, a snapshot of your beginning into hot rodding. We talked at your shop when we had that meeting and did the video. You grew up in Los Angeles.
That's right.
What was your introduction to hot rodding?
Well, when I was 1933, I was 12 years old, and we'd see these little cut-down cars go by. They were Model Ts or a Whippet or something like that.
Yeah.
Tried to make them into a little race car.
Yep.
For your personal transportation. Weather was good, and you could run them almost every day.
Yeah.
So then we found out where the guy lived, and we ordered him to talk to him. And he told us, if you really want to see a lot of them, come up to the Dry Lakes, 100 miles from Los Angeles, and you'll see hundreds of them.
And what
and
dry lake was?
Muroc Dry Lake.
Okay.
We got a ride up there, and we were amazed. They were not only in my little section of town, but they were all over Southern California and even Northern California.
Crazy.
This was
a hotbed.
This hot rodding thing was catching on, and there was more of these from all different parts of the state. You
amazing.
Know? We didn't know that. We only knew our little section of town.
When you were, what part of town were you talking about growing up in?
West Adams in La Brea area.
Downtown Los Angeles.
Crenshaw.
Yeah. And there, Jack, across the nation, getting a little bit of the same culture. Okay. Well, Iskey and Jack Lufkin, Ed Iskenderian and Jack Lufkin, what a pleasure. I know there's so much more here, but I wanted to be able to let the folks know. Here's a guy who, in what year was that you went over 300 miles an hour in that turbocharged big block Chevy. What year was that again? 73. Believable.
Let me tell you one quick story about an amazing thing. You talk about different cars and stuff.
Yeah.
There was a fellow that came up to Bonneville with a bicycle.
Yeah.
And he hooked a model engine that you run in a model airplane.
Yeah.
To his bicycle. He had three quarters of a cubic inch.
Okay.
3/4 of a cubic inch.
You got it. Less than a cubic inch.
He hooked it up on his bicycle. He went 57 miles an hour.
Unbelievable.
And that is like Ed says, it's one of the different things you see at Bonneville. And I don't know how far out your people go that are listening to us right now. But
right.
Bonneville is the second and third week in August of every year, and if you have time, set your vacation to go up there and look us up, and we'll be glad to give you the guided tour.
I'll tell you what, I'll bet you there's some people out there. You know, there's a small enclave of people in Santa Barbara and up to Santa Maria and south into Ventura. There's in every community in Southern California, I guess you guys, I'm sure you'd agree, there are the land speed culture members, the people who have those vehicles in their garages that they roll out every year, and they test themselves and their machinery to run up against the absolute margin of top speed for that vehicle. Well, Jack Lufkin and Ed Iskenderian, I appreciate. I know the audience must have enjoyed just a bit of a glimpse inside the car culture into Bonneville, and knowing that you guys were there at the outset of the 1940s into the 1950s and beyond. And here we are in 2013. It's a destination that everybody should make, like our Indy. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Absolutely right.
Anyway, I do appreciate both of you so much. And we need more time, but at least we got a chance here to give people a glimpse of the passion of the salt and why guys and gals go out there, even on a bicycle with less than 1 cubic inch, going how fast, Jack? 57 miles an hour?
57 miles an hour. And I mean, there's a guy with a model engine that you use in a model airplane.
Sure.
Hooked it up to go down the salt flats.
Absolutely. I mean, so
I
you're
mean,
saying...
you talk about engineering, that's it.
Oh, ringing it out for every bit of power. And then while I was on that trip with you guys, Jack, you gave me that DVD to watch. What is it, the fastest Indian? World's fastest Indian?
Bert Monroe, New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, another story of the passion for speed. Well, Jack Lufkin from Ack Miller Garage and Ed Iskenderian, two legends from the automotive culture in the land of Bonneville, where speed is the goal. And it's human and machine against wind and, that'd be about it, wind and rolling resistance, right?
Right, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Jack.
Okay.
Thank you. And thank you all for joining us for this segment on the World of Wheels. And this brings us to the close of another visit with all of you here on the Car Guys Show. Join us here again next week for another segment from the Coastal Riviera right here in Santa Barbara on News Talk 990 KTMS and video travels at thecarguy.com. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.